The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yes, still trying to absorb a lot of things that have been happening, not only on the security front, which we spoke a lot about yesterday, but of course the elections are looming large, and Prime Minister Netanyahu has become a lot more active recently in the media, trying to make sure that people see a lot of him to try and get his word out. The elections are now, we're already into the month of March. Elections are exactly 21 days, 3 weeks from now. It's still, you know, touch and go as to what might happen. I don't think anybody can really predict what the outcome is going to be. There's so much water under the bridge since the last election, and there seems to be still a lot of water under the bridge to flow under that bridge in the next 3 weeks. All indications are that we're going to head off back into a hung situation. And it doesn't seem likely that any of the parties are really going to be able to form a government. If that's the way that things are looking, if one believes the latest opinion polls and gets a feel for things. But there are a lot of people who seem to be undecided about what they're going to do, and might only decide as they're approaching the voting station as to exactly who they're going to vote for. So these days, I think, are going to be very influential getting those, scrambling to try to scrape together those extra seats. But we'll talk a little bit more about election matters on another occasion. But certainly, you can just feel that things have gone up a notch in terms of the campaign.
No doubt. No doubt. And we're going to definitely see, I think, some quite dramatic things happening from Netanyahu, as he tends to do in lead-ups to these elections in order to win votes.
No doubt, no doubt. I'm sure he's got a few little tricks up his sleeve.
Absolutely. The Israeli High Court of Justice yesterday settled the matter of the rights of non-Orthodox converts to obtain Israeli citizenship. What did the court decide, Anthony?
So this is a long, ongoing battle. It's been 15 years in the courts up until now. And the background is really the law of return. And for those people who aren't familiar with the law of return, we have a law in Israel which says that if you have one Jewish grandparent, then you are entitled to turn up at the airport and claim citizenship and a passport right away. No need for any other proof, no need for any other application, no need for a period during which time you have to be naturalized. No need for visas. You're entitled to claim citizenship of Israel right away. And of course, this goes back to the days of the Shoah, when the Nazis decided that if you had one Jewish grandparent, you were good enough to be persecuted along with all those 6 million Jews who ultimately died at the hands of the Nazis. And so the Israeli government decided that it would emulate that rule if you were enough to be chosen to be persecuted by the Nazis, then you were enough to gain Israeli citizenship under the law of return. And then in 1970, the law of return was amended also to include converts to Judaism. So now you don't need to have a Jewish grandparent, but if you have converted to Judaism, then equally you have rights to claim citizenship under the law of return. Of course, the whole issue of converts is extremely controversial. Who has the right to convert, under what auspices you convert, which rabbi signs your conversion document. And the general rule that's been applied up until now is that converts who come from outside of Israel, in other words, people who've gone through a conversion process outside of Israel, whether it be an Orthodox conversion process or not, can come to Israel and claim citizenship under the law of return. However, people who come to Israel as non-Jews and then convert to Judaism in Israel, which is quite an industry, there are quite a lot of people who choose to do that. Mm. People go to kibbutzim, they live a Jewish life, and they undergo a conversion process. It's quite a common thing, or not even kibbutzim in cities, but go through programs, and it is not an unusual thing. So those people who came to Israel and converted in Israel would only be entitled to citizenship under that 1970 amendment to the law of return if they underwent conversion through an Orthodox process rather than any other process, be it reform or conservative or any of the other various movements. And there, what happened was that they then applied to the courts to say that that's unfair. And they wished to ensure that even those people who in Israel underwent conversion through a non-Orthodox process would equally be entitled to receive citizenship under the law of return. And that was where it kind of sat in the courts for the last 15 years. Of course, the Orthodox movement are very keen to ensure that they have some sort of monopoly over the rights of people to convert to Judaism. They don't believe that the non-Orthodox method is sufficiently stringent, and therefore they don't believe that those people who've been through non-Orthodox conversions are qualified as being Jews in the eyes of halacha, in the eyes of Jewish law, and certainly shouldn't be entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return. Well, yesterday, a full panel of 9 justices in the High Court of Justice decided this once and for all, or maybe not once and for all, but at least for now. And 8 of the 9 justices agreed with all aspects of this huge landmark ruling, which decided that even those people who are converted through a non-Orthodox process will be entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return. The one dissenting judge decided not to oppose the ruling as such, but just thought that this should only begin to apply 12 months after the swearing in of the new government. So just a delayed implementation rather than a disagreement with the decision as such. And it was very interesting what the judges said, because there were a lot of references to so many different things. One of the things that they said was that they noted that non-Orthodox movements have well-established communities with a Jewish identity in Israel, that they maintain communal Jewish institutions, they conduct conversions in an organized manner, and they are part of a broader non-Orthodox denomination around the world. So they recognize that there is a community of people, that it is organized, that people just don't come off the street and turn up and, you know, claim things in a way that's not stringently organized, even though it might not quite conform to the standards of the Orthodox movement. But it is in and of itself an organized process, which is part of a community, which has policies, which has certain minimum requirements. And so the judges were impressed by that. And I think that that to some degree influenced their decision to ultimately say we should not discriminate against such people simply because they've gone through a conversion process that doesn't conform to the Orthodox movement. So I think that that's been a very, very fascinating decision. It's been stuck in the court for good reason because there's so much controversy around this. It would be interesting to hear what listeners out there have to say about this particular landmark decision. But we haven't heard the end of things yet.
Well, I was just going to say, what happens now? And has there been any reaction from the Orthodox community?
There's been massive reaction from the Orthodox community, all very much critical of this decision, thinking that this is an abomination, that this should not have been allowed to happen. And even more, the religious parties, the parties in the Knesset who represent religious values, have made it quite clear that in order for them to be attracted to a coalition government of any sort, one of the main requirements that they're going to lay down as not negotiable requirement is that this particular matter is reversed by law, that certain legislation is passed in order to reverse this matter. And more than one of the Orthodox parties has already said that they will not be willing to join any coalition unless this is taken on as part of the legislation program of the new government for the coalition that they form. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how that pans out, because there has been some criticism of this decision coming from the Likud. But of course, we know that the Likud is the natural partner for the Orthodox parties in the Knesset, and the Haredi parties certainly have said under no circumstances will they be willing to join any coalition unless this is put as a matter of priority to reverse this decision.
Really amazing. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 0618951019. Good thing, bad thing, or don't care? That's what I want to know from you. Now, this is different, Anthony, because a while back we spoke about there was this leak of from the Rabbanut, the Israeli Rabbanut, about a list of Beth Dins and organizations that they didn't accept, from whom they didn't accept the conversion. But that was different, right? That was, had nothing to do with citizenship. That was in terms of being able to get married, for example, in Israel. Is that right?
Right. So, quite a number of general laws about, you know, daily activities are also governed by Jewish law in Israel, as it turns out. So, for example, the law of marriage is one of them, that according to the law, you can't turn up and get married in Israel to somebody else who is of not of the same denomination as you. It doesn't matter whether you are Muslim or whether you're Christian or whether you're Jewish. Israeli law does not allow you to marry somebody who is not of your same denomination. So Jews who wish to marry people who are not halachically Jewish cannot do so in Israel. There's no option of going to get a registry office wedding or call it what you want, civil marriage of some sort. That option does not apply in Israel. So the moment you are considered to be not halachically Jewish, whether you are a citizen of Israel or not, you are unable to marry other Jewish people. And it's been a big, big issue for so many people who have been entitled to come and live in Israel, gain citizenship under the law of return, but potentially their grandparent comes from a patriarchal line, and therefore it does not confer upon that individual the Jewish the right to be called a Jew under halacha, under Jewish law, because that has to come through the matriarchal line. And so we have quite a number of people who come to Israel, who've lived here as Jews, who've practiced, you know, all kinds of Jewish customs, who have been to school, who've been to the army, who are Israelis just like everybody else, except that it just so happens that that they are an Israeli citizen because their grandfather was Jewish, and therefore those individuals don't have the right to marry other Jews, and that's a very, very big issue. So many of them do go through conversion processes in order to release this particular burden that they have. The army in particular supports it by having a conversion program for those people who join the army, soldiers who are not halachically Jewish but who wish to become halachically Jewish. The army has a very nice supportive program where they support such people to become Jewish. But of course the Rabbanut has the ultimate say as to whether the process that an individual has been through is sufficiently good in order to allow them to qualify under the Rabbanut. And of course the Rabbanut therefore hold also the balance of power as to whether that individual can marry another Jew or be buried in a Jewish cemetery, or, you know, whatever the rules are that surround halacha that apply to Jews as opposed to non-Jews. So yeah, a lot of controversy around this issue of exactly who is a Jew and what those Jews should be entitled to, and whether this type of conversion is kosher enough, or whether that type of conversion has to be done not only for the rights of citizens or people to become citizens, but also the rights of people to do many other things that we do in everyday lives.
Yeah, a fascinating conversation. A number of COVID restrictions are due to be lifted next week. What are those restrictions, Anthony?
So the main ones which are now being discussed are allowing people to go to restaurants, restaurants reopening for in-house dining. People will be able to sit outdoors almost in an unrestricted fashion or much less restricted fashion, and people will be able to sit indoors as well. That will be for people who carry a green card, people who've been vaccinated or people who have recovered from COVID. And just as a side note, interestingly, up until now, people who have recovered have not been required to be vaccinated, but it has now been decided that if you are more than 90 days after recovering from COVID, that you should be vaccinated. That's a new thing that's come out. So those people are going to be vaccinated and will still continue to qualify for a green card once they've received their vaccination. And green card holders will be able to do in-house dining, inside dining at restaurants, and other people also outdoors at restaurants. So those are due to open next week. Hotels are due to open on a more much broader basis, including the dining rooms of hotels, which up until now have been closed for those hotels that have been allowed to open. So those are the two main things which are going to be going to be withdrawn, restrictions which are going to be withdrawn, planning for next week. Also, the children in grades 7 to 10, who up until now, officially according to the Ministry of Education, haven't been allowed to return to school, are also finally due to return to school for face-to-face tuition. And there is also talk about reopening the airport. This is now the latest discussion that we're holding about the potential of gradually reopening Ben Gurion Airport, which up until now has been very firmly shut, with very, very few people coming through there. So those are the main new things which we see planned for next week. I think we're still waiting to see whether there might be some sort of a fallout from the Purim celebrations or whether the vaccine is really going to come into its own. And what we've seen certainly over the last week or two is a significant reduction in the number of people who have been dying and the significant reduction in the number of people who are seriously ill from COVID-19. So I'm hoping that that's the way in which the vaccination is ultimately presenting itself and that we will continue to see that at least for the foreseeable future. But certainly a much greater reopening is anticipated for next week.
Brilliant. I mean, that is really great news. And of course, there's a lot of kids here in particular who are sitting and waiting to see if they can go on the Israel programs, waiting right every day to see are the airports going to be opened to them or not.
So at the moment, we're not exactly sure. There is some discussion about potentially reopening the airport. And it's also not exactly clear what restrictions will be placed on people who come through the airport, whether they will need to go into quarantine, whether there will be hotels, what will be required. At the moment, all I can say is that it's all about vaccination and testing, either getting vaccinated or if you're not vaccinated, being tested regularly to produce negative results. We're seeing that everywhere now. Workplaces, also, by the way, event halls could potentially be opening next week as well as part of the reduction of the restrictions. So we are feeling a definite change in the mood, and let's hope that that will continue.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Anthony joins us every morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.